Welcome to today's episode of the Normalize Surrogacy Podcast by Surrogacy Mentor. I'm your host, Carrie Flamer Powell, experienced gestational surrogate, surrogacy agency founder, and owner of Surrogacy Mentor and Modern Parent Mentor, where our aim is a safe, ethical, and enjoyable surrogacy journey for all. Today, I am joined by our very special guest, Tawny Bodecker of All Family Surrogacy. Welcome, Tawny.
Thank you.
Nice to see you. We know each other a little bit, right?
Quite well.
A little bit, yeah. So before we dig in to today's topic, which is going to be your personal experience as a surrogate and your also difficult experience as a surrogate with a late-term termination. So before we dig into that, let's talk a little bit about you and your background. So your bio here on the All Families Surrogacy website, you are the coordination manager for All Families Surrogacy, responsible for managing all the day-to-day aspects of each surrogate's journey and ensuring each surrogate has the support they need. Tawny became interested in surrogacy when she was pregnant with her first child after a close friend struggled with infertility and went through the surrogacy process. It's been an integral part of Tawny's life since. Tawny brings several years of administrative experience to her position and is also an experienced surrogate. She's married to her high school sweetheart and is the mother of three boys. She enjoys family trips, watching her boys play sports, exploring the outdoors, and game nights in her free time. She also has a passion for animals and adores her golden doodle, Henry. And I have a feeling you have some additional animals to add to that list since this was published.
Always. They didn't include my three cats, but cats are a huge part of my life as well. And we've also gone through a leopard gecko and a hamster.
Yes. Tawny is well known for her love of animals. So full disclosure, I used to own All Family Surrogacy. I'm the original founder of All Family Surrogacy. I sold it in 2020 and I hired Tawny back in what year did I hire you?
2015.
Wow. I can't believe that. Next year will be 10 years. Wow. Time flies. So Tawny and I have known each other well, worked with each other for many, many years. And I consider you a friend. So I am excited to chat with you today and learn more about your personal experience as a surrogate and touch on one of the topics that's not talked about as often as I think it should be, which is what happens when a surrogacy journey doesn't go the way everyone hoped and what happens when it actually ends tragically. So let's first start with, tell me a little bit about that very beginning spark of what interested you in surrogacy and like where were you in your life? How old were you? What was going on in your life and what was interesting about it to you?
Yeah, so I was a really young mom. I had my first at 19, actually. I always feel like I'm 20 years older than I am. So I was 19, but I realistically felt much older. My pregnancy went great. While I was pregnant, I got to know a really good friend, and she had been suffering from infertility, and she had been tracking her ovulation for several months, and she had met with a fertility clinic, and they had talked about trying to do IUI first, and then potentially her needing surrogacy later on down the road. And so at the time, I had just delivered my son. I was 20 years old, and in order to do surrogacy, you need to be 21. And she has still had a few steps to be able to get to that place first. I ended up having a second child of my own. And while I was pregnant with my second child, she ended up getting pregnant through IUI. So it was really awesome and great that she didn't end up needing surrogacy. And then just the cherry on top, she got pregnant naturally 3 months after delivery. So it was a whirlwind for her.
Wow.
But because I had started researching surrogacy so much during the end of my first pregnancy and then through my second pregnancy, that hope and spark never really left. And I realized that there are a lot of people that need surrogacy in order to build their family. And so that is where I began my journey.
Wow. Okay. So that's how a lot of women end up in surrogacy, right? They know someone who has experienced infertility or had trouble in their own pregnancies and they want to help in some way. And so that's a super common way that a lot of women are like, hey, how can I help? What can I do? So you have this idea, you're now 21, or how old are you at this point when you actually apply to a surrogacy agency and become a surrogate for the first
time? 22, which is actually still very young for surrogacy. Yeah. But remember, I'm 10 years older.
Right. Yes, we know. You applied, I'm guessing, with an agency. Did you go through an agency?
Yeah. So I started looking. There were some surrogacy pages about matching independently. And I felt like while I did quite a bit of research, I wasn't researched enough to do an independent journey. Yeah. And I had found a large agency, a local agency, and I figured they're big and well-known and they must be great at what they do. And so I signed away my life, all my paperwork, and said, let's get this process going. Mm-hmm.
And so you signed up, and how was your matching process and how was that experience working with an agency?
So it took a while to get my records. I would say it took a couple months to get my records. But once all that came in, obviously my pregnancies were smooth and they sought clinic approval. That was quick. Matching process, I received 3 profiles. They actually presented 3 at a time, which is a little abnormal from what clinics do now. And I had an instant connection with a man and woman that had one child of their own. Mm-hmm. She had many losses and they actually only had one embryo left. And so it wasn't tested. The embryo was actually transported from another clinic. And I was not really well educated on the aspect of tested embryos and transferring embryos and what that meant. But we ended up having a match call that was done via Zoom. It was great. We ended up matching and decided to move forward in a journey.
And were they local to you or were they in a different state?
So I'm in the Portland area in Oregon and they were located in Seattle. So sister state.
Okay. So driving distance. So that's nice. Okay. So you get matched and you get approved at the clinic and you have an embryo transfer. And what happens?
Yeah. So we had the embryo transfer in December. It was successful. They checked my HCG level. It was positive. They did the first ultrasound at 6.5 weeks. Everything looked great. They did another ultrasound at 9.5 weeks. Everything looked great. Mm-hmm. I transferred to my OB, had a scan at 12 weeks. Everything looked great. Mm-hmm. The parents weren't able to attend that first ultrasound. So we ended up doing an ultrasound at 16 weeks because remember, the embryo wasn't tested. And so everyone was super excited to know whether it was a boy or a girl. Mm-hmm. We ended up going to one of those boutique ultrasound places because in Oregon, you can't just opt to have ultrasounds. You need to cross the state line and go over to Vancouver. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be somewhat medically trained. And if there is anything of abnormal, note that they send that over to the doctor office. Mm-hmm. At 16 weeks, everything still looked great. We found out it was a boy. Mom was able to attend. We went out to lunch. We celebrated. No concerns. We end up having an anatomy scan that's scheduled 4 weeks later at 20 weeks. Mm-hmm. Mom came down for that appointment and we went to that appointment. And during the ultrasound, in our eyes, everything started off great. You know, the ultrasound tech doesn't really tell you if there's any concerns. And then she said, I need to step out just a second. I want the doctor to take a couple looks at something that's come up on the ultrasound. And so I start to get a little bit nervous. I've never had a doctor have to come in during an ultrasound. Mom is actually a doctor. Mm-hmm. And while fertility and babies and OB isn't her specialty, it also triggers a response in her. Mm-hmm. Because she did carry her babies before and ended up having late-term loss. So she's well experienced with ultrasounds in that aspect. Mm-hmm. Doctor came in. He did his own scan. And then he said, I'm going to be really transparent with you. Baby has very severe hydrocephalus. So there's swelling in the brain ventricles. He said the swelling was very significant and that the prognosis was not great, that he wanted us to sit down with a genetic specialist and really talk about what this meant for the duration of the pregnancy. At that point, Mom is beside herself, bawling her eyes out. I'm laying there shaking. I don't know what it means. I still don't really realize at this point the termination is something that can even be discussed. So I'm thinking, you know, the next forever is going to be extremely difficult and different for her. Mm-hmm. Doctor leads us back into a room and we sit there and we talk about the measurements. And he had been in the specialty for 22 years. Mm-hmm. I believe it was 22 years. I do remember really, you know, weird things during that day. Wow. But he had said that this was one of the most severe diagnoses that he had seen in his career.
Wow.
But if baby did survive the duration of the pregnancy, which was a possibility, baby would immediately need to have brain shunts placed. And then those brain shunts would be something that would need to be placed throughout during specific periods of his life, that he was never going to have a normal life. Wow. He did state that baby was going to have a long-term disability that was likely never going to be able, he was never going to be able to live on his own. With all of these medical appointments, his head was going to be swollen to such a significant amount that it was just all around a really tough diagnosis.
Yeah.
So at that point, you know, as a surrogate, I respect the mom and dad's decision. Dad was able to FaceTime in on the call. They said that they needed 24 hours. They were going to talk it out, and then they were going to get back with me. Mm-hmm. After 24 hours, they called me. It wasn't even 24 hours. They let me know, because they already have a daughter, because they're experienced in the medical field, because they actually have known people that have had children with hydrocephalus, they knew that this wasn't something that they could take on.
Yeah.
But they didn't want me to go into this feeling like I didn't fully understand and comprehend what this is. So we scheduled another ultrasound 1 week later at 21 weeks. And this was done at a specialty medical practice. Mm-hmm. Mom and dad didn't attend that appointment. They just wanted the results faxed over to them. And they were going to review that with a doctor that they had known. And from the point that I had my ultrasound to the point that I had this 20-week ultrasound, the swelling had already increased. Yeah. And I remember ultrasound techs are supposed to be very, you know, straight face, not sure emotion. And the gal that was doing the ultrasound, I saw her wipe away a tear. And I knew that it wasn't a great diagnosis. And I didn't even ask for further information. I just had them send it over to them.
Sure. And so I'm sure, like you said, at this point, everyone knows what's ahead and is just kind of trying to figure out how to best deal with it. How is your agency involved in this at this point?
So my agency was big and large and well-known, which was great. But this was one downside of having a large agency, is that they did have a lot of other cases and they didn't know about my specific situation until I had called them. And that was after I had that second ultrasound done. I let them know what was being looked at, that termination was on the table, and that was something that I didn't want to do. And the agency, they weren't great, but they weren't terrible. They just listened. They didn't have much to say other than, I'm sorry, we're thinking of you. I hope that you guys come to a decision that works best for everybody.
Right. So you mentioned that you didn't want to terminate and the parents did. So where did you go next? What was the next step in trying to figure this out?
Yeah. And when I say I didn't want to terminate, I mean, obviously, when anyone goes into the pregnancy, that's not your goal. So it wasn't that I was saying I wasn't going to do this. I didn't want to terminate. It was something I didn't want to have to go through.
Sure.
But ultimately, I wanted the parents to have that full decision making process. And so this all happened in 1 week. I think my ultrasound was like a Monday. My second ultrasound was like a Wednesday. And then we met with a genetic specialist on a Friday. Mm-hmm. I remember it was right before weekend. We re-met with a specialist, shared all of that. And the parents said, we can't proceed with the pregnancy. I hope you understand. I stayed quiet. I respected their choice. And I said, what does that mean? Where do we go from here? My OB was in on that call as well. And she said that we had a couple options. We could either do a D&C, which would be taking medication, going under, and then having them terminate that pregnancy that way. Or they could give me medication to be able to jumpstart labor, and I would actually go through the delivery of the baby, in which case he wouldn't survive because of his health and because of what early gestation he was. The parents said that they had no preference. They were fine with whatever I felt was best on my body. I decided that I did want to go through the delivery, because at this point, when you're a surrogate, yes, it's not your child, but you go to all these appointments and you're feeling the kicks, you're feeling the movement, you're nurturing your body, you're taking care of yourself the best way possible. And it just felt like the next step for me. I felt like it was going to be able to give me the best closure And the parents were respectful of that. At the end of the day, they just wanted to be able to have the baby cremated. They wanted to be able to respect their child in that way and have them forever in that capacity. So either situation would have given them that.
Right. And, you know, something you said struck me as important to point out, which is that obviously the situation is not ideal for anybody. This is painful for everyone when a pregnancy, whether it's a surrogacy or not, goes a traumatic way, right? So add in the extra stress of it being a surrogacy, you're pregnant for someone else, and there's a lot of people involved in the situation. It's a whole other dynamic of stress, right? But I think it's kind of amazing and beautiful that in the midst of this difficult situation, you were able to give the parents the grace of saying, this is your child, this is your decision. And they were able to give you the grace of saying, this is your body, choose the way that you feel best about, because it's you that has to go through this experience. So even though it's a horrible situation and there nobody wins, at least you were able to each give each other that in that moment. And I think that it's like the best you could have expected for a situation like this, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, obviously you can talk as much or as little as you want about the experience, but you do end up going through with the delivery at, is it 21 weeks gestation, 22
yeah.
weeks?
It was just about 22 weeks, just shy of 22 weeks at that point. So the hospital that's closest to my house is actually a Catholic hospital. And because of that, they were not willing to take me on as a patient and induce labor. So they did advise me going to a different hospital. I went to that hospital. I got hooked up with my IVs. They gave me medication pill form to be able to start the contractions. It took quite a bit longer than anyone anticipated. I would say it was about 24 hours. Mom decided that she wasn't able to attend at that time. She had gone through this herself, and it was a lot of PTSD, I feel, that struck her there. Dad did attend, which was great because that was my biggest preference. I wanted at least one of them there because this is their child, their experience, and to be able to do whatever they felt that they needed to do. Mm-hmm. After delivery, baby was born sleeping because of how swollen he was. Yeah. He wasn't able to withstand the contractions, which is not something that we didn't expect that. But it also just kind of reiterated for everybody that he wasn't healthy, and it was going to be a really tough pregnancy. And I still don't believe that he would have survived the duration of the pregnancy. And so in the long run, I do feel like they made not only the best decision for them, but the best decision for me, their family. And I don't hold anything against them for what they felt they needed to do. After delivery, I was able to hold him. We took a lot of pictures. At that time, Mom wasn't sure that she wanted pictures. So I actually ended up holding on to them for about 6 weeks until I ended up sending them to her. But it was a really tough experience, and I had a lot of sadness afterwards and a lot of guilt as a surrogate. Even though it's not anything that you did, you go into this wanting to be, you know, the beacon of great news and not something that brings people down. So that was tough. I did do some postpartum counseling. I ended up pumping for just a couple weeks. Milk does come in at that point. I felt like that was going to be helpful. It ended up not being helpful. In my case, I was too emotional at that point. And I remember just spending night after night reading about hydrocephalus and diagnoses and best case and worst case scenarios. And I felt that the more that I know, the more that it helped me. After that, we remained in, you know, general communication. We checked in on each other every month or so, but I felt like I didn't want my journey to end there. And so I did start thinking about whether a second journey would be something that I was open to.
So, I mean, first of all, I'm so glad that you were able to get mental health support, that we've been talking a lot about that in the surrogacy industry the last several years, that mental health should be an integral part of any surrogacy journey, especially when things don't go well, but just even when things are going great, mental health should be just like medical care, right? It should be part of the package. for surrogates and parents. So I'm glad that you were able to get the mental health support that you needed. So you decided after, I'm guessing, taking some time that you wanted to start the process again. So how long did you wait and what was your next step?
I waited about 6 months and I had reached out to my agency, which actually after delivery was great. They did check in, they sent a card, they sent flowers, and they actually sent our family on a trip to Disneyland postpartum, which was a really nice kind of post-healing trip to take with my kids.
Yeah.
So about the 5 month mark, I had reached out to the agency and I said, you know, I had such great pregnancies and deliveries with my own kids. I can't bear to think that this is the way that my last pregnancy ends. And I still have a huge heart and passion for surrogacy. So let's try this again. My first intended parents, as we know, they only had one embryo. They weren't willing or wanting to move forward with surrogacy any longer. They were content with their one daughter that they had. And so I did end up matching. This time I matched with a couple from Australia. So other side of the world.
Yeah.
And we were really optimistic and hopeful that everything would go great.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, we had an embryo transfer and it wasn't successful. It just didn't work out, which was new for me. Second transfer, it was successful, but the numbers went down. So it was a chemical pregnancy. And third transfer, we experienced the same. So I was super disappointed at this point. I was kind of reeling from my surrogacy experience that, you know, you do all this research and all these hopes and expectations of how your journey will go. And in none of my research did I expect to face this tough challenge twice in two different, totally different ways.
Right. So at this point, I'm sure that you just gave up on surrogacy and never looked back on surrogacy, right? Like you just left the whole field and never did anything else, right?
You would think, but no. So actually, shortly after my third transfer, and at this point, the embryos looked good. Mm-hmm. I looked good. There was no reason or rhyme, but a fertility clinic's not going to keep transferring if there's something not working. So they ended up advising breaking the match. I broke the match, and in my local surrogate support group, I came across a lady named Carrie who had posted that she had started an agency and was looking for just some administrative help during the week. And so I felt if surrogacy wasn't going to touch my life personally with the pregnancy, maybe doing some stuff on the backside would be a really good opportunity for me. And lo and behold, it was, because I'm still here.
Here you are, 9 years later, still at the same agency. That's awesome. So you turned what was, you know, really sad and heartbreaking experiences into a career. And then I'm sure you gave up on being a surrogate, right?
Well, at this point, like I said, I was a young mom. And I remember attending my second child's kindergarten graduation and feeling like, I can't believe I'm going to be an empty nester of sorts. And let's do this again. Let's have another baby. So I ended up having another baby of my own in 2018. He's our third cherry on top. And yes, another boy. And at that point, that pregnancy and delivery was also amazing and complication free. And I didn't think that surrogacy would cross my path in my own personal life again. But working in the industry, you hear so many stories and you get to know so many intended parents and their journey. And I felt like if I had the capacity to do it, if a doctor felt that it was medically safe for me to do it, let's try it again.
Sure.
And so I did. I matched with a set of intended parents back in 2021. Mm-hmm. This time they were from Israel. And it was actually shortly before going to a conference in Israel. There was a Men Having Babies conference. So I was actually able to travel to Israel, go to the conference and meet them in person prior to us actually starting our journey. So they were great. It was great. It was a completely different clinic. We had one embryo transfer with one mediocre embryo, and transfer was successful and pregnancy was great. Delivery was great. And I delivered my surrogacy babe just over 11 months ago.
That's so cool. So all of this heartbreak, all of this, you know, tragedy, honestly, ended in a almost decade-long career and a healthy surrogacy journey. So there is hope at the end of what can feel like a really dark and tragic experience. From we hear about those stories on the parent side all the time, right? Like they go through years of infertility and loss, and then they finally are able to have a family or build their family, grow their family through surrogacy. Well, on the surrogate side, we don't often hear stories of things not starting out so wonderful and then ending up actually turning out pretty great. So I think yours is a really good example of how that is possible. And I think at the heart of it, from the outside looking in, is that you just never gave up. You just kept coming back to where your heart was leading you. And it resulted in a whole other family being created, which is kind of amazing.
Absolutely. I feel really blessed that my experience ended the way that it did. And all that to say is I did completely respect if a fertility clinic looked at my records and felt that I wasn't a good candidate, you don't want to put yourself up for a potential pregnancy with parents and give them more heartbreak. But there was nothing in my records that led anyone to believe that. I really just felt like it was tough luck, tough luck, tough luck. Mm-hmm. And that end result was worth all of that 10 years. And I don't regret any part of my journey. I do feel like it's tough and it's hard, but I'm really grateful that I'm able to share that experience because I'm not the only one that goes through tough parts of their journey. And I think when people look outward to the groups and to their friends, you don't get a lot of feedback from people that have had that experience. So I am grateful that I'm able to share that with others.
Yeah. And I'm actually personally very aware that your experiences have led you to be awesome at what you do professionally and allow you to connect with the surrogates that you work with in a way that's super helpful to them and to the parents as a byproduct of that. So kudos to you for taking your experience and, you know, your negative experiences and turning them into a positive in your career. I think that's awesome. And I think it's a huge asset for surrogates that you're supporting to know that you've been through it all.
Literally.
All of it. Yeah. And you can, when you listen to what they're going through, you can relate probably to 99% of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what do you wish women who are listening to this podcast right now, who are considering becoming a surrogate, what advice do you have for them or what do you wish that they knew?
I think that women that are considering surrogacy should know that it is never, almost never, exactly how you anticipate things to go. That there are going to be hurdles. And as long as you follow the clinic's recommendations and you stay closely connected with your intended parents and closely connected to what your hopes and aspirations are out of the surrogacy journey, that at the end of the day, the journey that you're supposed to have is going to be the journey that you are supposed to have. And that while it may not feel optimal at that time, it will be optimal for you and others. So be strong and be proud of what you're doing.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I think that you're the epitome of being strong through the ups and downs of surrogacy. So I think that's really good advice. So thank you for sharing your story. I know it's not easy to go through these types of stories, but it's important. And I think that people listening will get a lot out of this. So I appreciate you. Thank you.
I hope so. Thank you.
Thank you. So that brings us to the end of this episode of the Normalized Surrogacy Podcast. Again, I'm your host, Carrie Flamer Powell. I want to again thank our very special guest, Tawny Bodecker of All Family Surrogacy. Be sure to check us out online at surrogacymentor.com if you're interested in knowing whether surrogacy is right for you. Take our easy 2-minute quiz on our website. Also check out modernparentmentor.com if you're considering an independent surrogacy journey as a surrogate or parent. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast to learn more about gestational surrogacy and how to have a safe, ethical, and enjoyable surrogacy journey. Talk to you next time.